Welcome. Hare Krishna. Today I elected to speak on deconstructing the indestructible soul. So I'm going to speak mostly from Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. Can't go wrong when you speak from Bhagavad Gita. And the first verse we'll start with is text 17. Avinashi tatadvidhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyayasyasya na kaschid kartumarhati. Know that that which pervades the entire body is indestructible. No one can destroy the imperishable soul. So I want to read a little bit of the purport. This translation, of course, of Bhagavad Gita, as it is done by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada, our founder. He begins, this verse more clearly explains the real nature of the soul, which is spread all over the body. Actually, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto, that the soul is situated hridi in the heart. But it's spread all over the body. He continues, anyone can understand what is spread all over the body. It is consciousness. Consciousness, awareness. Everyone is conscious of the pains and pleasures of the body in part or as a whole. This spreading of consciousness is limited within one's own body. The pains and pleasures of one body are unknown to another. Therefore, each and every body is the embodiment of an individual soul. And the symptom of the soul's presence is perceived as individual consciousness, awareness. This soul is described as 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair. That's its size. According to, there are several verses from different places. This verse is from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. There's another verse similarly in the Katha Upanishad. 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair. So it is atomic in size. The soul, the symptoms of the soul are a realized soul, our symptoms, I should say qualities, symptoms, are three in number. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Right? Most of you know that. So Sat is eternity. Chit is knowledge or consciousness, awareness. Awareness to the degree that everything is known. Everything that can be known is known. We don't have that now, no offense. Maybe some of you do that belong to Mensa, perhaps, but most of us don't have it, right? Sat, Sat, Chit, Ananda. What does that mean? Bliss. What are we all running around chasing after, my friends? Tell me. Bliss. I just want to be happy. Of course you do. You are hardwired to be happy. Are you happy in the material world? Some days. I'm happy today. I had a good day. Tomorrow? Yesterday? Oh my God. Don't ask me. Right? Riding the waves. That's what happens here in the material world. The soul, in its pure state, has complete consciousness. It is already Sat, Chit, Ananda. It already has eternity. It already has knowledge and consciousness. It already has bliss unadulterated happiness. What happened? How come we're not experiencing that? That these qualities are actually your birthright. And if you're not experiencing them, something's wrong. Truly. So why is it? Why does it work like that? It's like a precious gem encased in rock. Like a diamond encased in rock. A diamond, they find, they mine from rocks, unless it appears in a stream or something. And they have to cut away all of the rock that isn't the diamond, right? Until they get to the uncut diamond. Then they have to cut it very carefully until they can manifest a beautiful gemstone from it. It is a tremendous process. And it takes many years of training and expertise to be able to do that as a gem cutter. To bring out the luster and the beauty and the fire. The brilliance of the stone. That's already there with the soul. The problem comes in when we cover it over by this body. This is the rock part. The dense rock. No offense, my friends. I'm not suggesting you're dense. But we're all dense in the sense that we are covered by this. By earth, by water, by fire, by air, by ether. The gross elements, the subtle elements are manas, mind, buddhi, intellect, and ego, ahankar. That's the tricky one, ego. Okay, Prabhupada continues, any layman can understand that the material body minus consciousness is a dead body. What is death? You've left. You're gone. There's the body. All the parts are there. If you dissect it, all the organs are there. What happened? She's gone. She left. He's gone. We're sad. Why are we sad? Because our friend is gone. Our friend, our loved one, we know they're gone. And that body begins to decay when? How soon? Tell me. Immediately. Correct? And we have to dispense with it pretty quick. As much as we love that person. Because that's what happens when consciousness leaves the body. And this consciousness cannot be revived in the body by any means of material administration. You hook them up to the paddles, clear. That's what they try to do. They try to bring you back to life. In the emergency, in the A&E, they try to revivify you. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There's many great stories of people who have died, gone across, came back. Great stories. Some of them went into the light, some of them didn't. Right? Therefore, consciousness is not due to any amount of material combination, but to the spirit soul. So what the science has been trying to tell us, it's in the textbooks, is that it's matter over spirit. First there comes matter, and then later comes spirit. This is the Big Bang theory of creation. A bunch of molecules and chemicals and various rocks and this and that came together. There was an explosion, and then one, you know, after millions of years, some tadpole crawled out of the ocean, and it all began. And here I thought we were descended from monkeys, but I guess it's tadpoles after all. No, we're not. We're descended from the gods. From there. It's from up, down. It's not from down, up. You people are not monkeys. You're not tadpoles. Those are not your ancestors. I know, I'm speaking against the scientific gospel here. forgive me. In the Mundaka Upanishad, the measurement of the atomic spirit soul is further explained. The soul is atomic in size and can be perceived by perfect intelligence. The atomic soul is floating in the five kinds of air: prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. Five kinds of air in the body. They go up, down, in, out. They carry things. I won't go into the description of the five kinds of air. And Prabhupada goes on, the Hatha Yoga system. Hatha Yoga system is the Ashtanga Yoga system of asanas, postures, pranayama, breathing. I can't remember them all now. Pratyahara, dhyana, dhanana, many. The Hatha Yoga system is meant for controlling the five kinds of air encircling the pure soul by different kinds of sitting postures for the liberation of the minute soul from the entanglement of material atmosphere. So that is the mechanical way to do it. If you take up that process of yoga practice, can you ultimately liberate the soul? Yes. It's much more difficult if we read what the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we find out all the different processes there are to approach Krishna, to approach God. And that one is, it takes a little longer and is a lot more difficult. Here we practice bhakti yoga. Yoga, love, and devotion. Another verse, text 18. Antavanta ime deha nityas yukta sharirinaha anashino prameyasya tasmad yudyasvabharata. Only the material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is subject to destruction. Therefore, fight, O Arjuna. So Arjuna is a warrior. Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, who is having second thoughts about his duty, about doing his duty, about following his dharma, his life purpose, his obligation, his responsibility, what he signed up for. Do you ever have doubts and questions about doing your duty? Oh, yes. Unquestionably, you have. Like getting up early in the morning and getting out on the cold, walking down the cold street, waiting at the bus stop or the tram stop or the train stop. So you can get there, get to work on time. We all question it from time to time, don't we? But here, millions of warriors were gathered on two sides, waiting the beginning of the battle. And Arjuna, the number one archer in the world at that time, warrior number one, had already thrown his bow and his arrows down onto his chariot and told Krishna, I don't think I can fight, because I don't want to kill those who oppose me, loved ones, friends, my guru, my grandfather. I can't justify. Well, you know, crisis of conscience, it sounds reasonable, but this is Krishna explaining to him. You're not looking at it correctly. Prabhupada says, the material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. We're supposed to live for 100 years in Kali Yuga. Do you know that? We're supposed to live for 100 years. Not 62. Not 43. 100. That is our prescribed length of life in Kali Yuga. And many of you will say, I don't want to live that long. So old. If you're healthy and strong and vital and functional, then you may say, no, that's fine. There's a nice article in the newspaper this week of an 82-year-old man who just got his university degree. I don't remember where it was. Was it in Cork or someplace? 82. And all the young ones, they all have cap and gown, and all the young ones around them, you know. If you're vital and vigorous, why not? Why should we live that long? Because, my friends, we are here to work through our karma. People think just enjoy yourselves. That's what it's all about. No, it isn't all about that. Can you squeeze some in now and then? Yeah, sure. Why not? If you make that your number one goal in life, not a wise choice. Why are we here? We're here to fulfill some desires, yeah. Granted. We're here to learn lessons. That's why we're here. To grow, to evolve. That's the goal, among other things. There is no chance of maintaining the body indefinitely, but the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by the enemy, to say nothing of being killed. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. The body itself is, in that sense, unimportant. It is a vehicle. If you own a car, you will probably maintain your car, put fuel in it, clean it, drive it here, drive it there. And when you stop your car and take the key out of the ignition and go off and do whatever it is you're doing, do you keep thinking about your car? I think not. When it's parked out in front of your house at night, do you think about it all night long? I don't think so. The same with the body. It's a vehicle. It has a function. It's not the be-all and the end-all. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and sacrifice the material body for the cause of dharma. So dharma is duty, obligation, right action. What is your purpose in your life? In the physical body, as an individual, in this lifetime. I'm not talking about your spiritual purpose. To become God conscious. That's more important than anything. Let's set that aside. What is your purpose here as an individual? What are you here to do? What are your qualities? What are your talents? What are your abilities? What are your inclinations? Are you utilizing your fundamental nature, your abilities, and your interests in your lifetime? Are you utilizing them? In your work, in what you do, in how you represent yourself in the world. That's doing your dharma from that point of view. That is the win-win situation. You become rewarded by what you do. It fulfills you as a person. And you make a contribution to the world around you. We're not here just to be self-involved and self-serve. We're here to serve. We're all here to serve. So, in serving, we should be pleasing ourselves in the sense of acting in accordance with our nature. And serving our fellow man, serving others, making a contribution. Ultimately, serving Krishna, serving God. So then there we have the win, win, win. Prabhupada points out, this does not encourage the killing of the body. You know, what's not being said here, oh yeah, just go out and kill everybody. No. The Vedic conjunction is Mahing Syat Sarvabhutani. Mahing Syat. Do not be cruel toward Sarvabhutani, all living entities. Show no cruelty, no violence. Never commit violence to anyone, that's he says. Nor does understanding that the living entity is not killed encourage animal slaughter. Killing the body of anyone without authority is abominable and is punishable by the law of the state as well as by the law of God. Arjuna, however, is being engaged in killing for the principle of religion and not whimsically. The war is based on, this war was based on Dharma. How do we know? Because the Pandavas, Arjuna and his four brothers, the kingdom had been usurped, had been misappropriated through a crooked gambling match. And we'll get into that story, but that's what happened. And they asked for the kingdom back after 14 years, which was the agreement. And they said, no, we won't give it back. But it was the rightful kingdom. And Yudhishthira, Arjuna's older brother, was the rightful heir. In fact, he had been king prior to that. Sometimes killing is approved. In what sense? Well, we have the police force. The police are here to do what? To enforce, to uphold the law, to enforce the law, to protect the people. Who's the people? Us. If somebody's on the street, if two men accost you in the street and start beating you up and trying to rob you, and there's a policeman standing there and he's texting on his phone, like everybody else is doing, you're going, put the phone down, man. Help me here. Huh? When there's weapons, when people are using guns and there's gunfire, we hope the police come with guns and shoot the perpetrators. And if they do, what is this considered? This is considered to be violence based in Dharma. Huh? Right action. In order to what? To protect the person who's under fire and to enforce the law and to keep everybody else safe. It's right action. So there are some cases in which violence is acceptable. The next verse 20. Najayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva babita va nabuya. Ajonit yang shashvato yam purano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. For the soul there is never birth, nor death, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying, primeval. Interesting word, I like that word. Primeval, and he is not slain when the body is slain. Primeval means what? No beginning. There's no beginning for the soul. The soul is, we are part and parcel of God. If God is compared to a fire, we are the sparks. Right? As long as all these little sparks are in the fire, we blaze away. Sometimes you see sparks jumping out of the fire. Have you not seen them? And they land, hopefully not on your knee. They land on the floor, they land here or there, on the stone in front of the fireplace. And what happens to them? Psst. They go out. It's a great analogy. Just remove yourself from God, see what happens. Oh, I'm shining. Psst. Not for long. must stay connected. God's the fire. We're the sparks. In this purport, Prabhupada says, qualitatively, the small atomic fragmental part of the Supreme Spirit is one with the Supreme. He is the whole. We are the fragments. Fragments of the whole. He undergoes no changes like the body. What is one of the things that humans are most afraid of? One word. Give it to me. Death. Starts with a... Yeah, death's a good one. Mm-hmm. Not that one. That's it starts with a C. Change. Change.
Oh, I don't want to run. Oh, maybe change.
Unless you like David Bowie.
Like
change.
Changes.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. Yes, change. Some people are deathly afraid of change. One of the most fearful things people do is they change house. That's known to be high on the list of stress factors because it's change, moving. People are scared of change. Change is inevitable in this world, my friends. It's inevitable. If you don't believe me, go look at a photo of yourself when you were 3 years old. And you're going to go, who was that guy? I see some resemblance. Why did they dress him so funny? That's what I want to know. Change. You're never going to look like that again in this lifetime. So we must embrace change. Be here now. Embrace change. Embrace where you are and be grateful for what you've gone through. Oh, I know. Much of it you don't want to be grateful for. Hey, I could have done without it. But it got you to this point, you see. And if you've been learning, if you've learned, you see the value of that. You won't see the value of it when you're in the middle of it. Believe me. Why are you doing this to me? Didn't I put some money in the collection plate? And now you treat me like this. But in hindsight, you'll see the value. Yeah? You can all think of something in your past that was painful, horrendous. And now you see what it taught you. The soul takes its birth in the womb of the mother's body. Prabhupada continues, remains for some time, grows, produces some effects. Effects are like children. Or whatever you achieve in the world. Gradually dwindles and at last vanishes into oblivion. Seemingly. The soul, however, does not go through such changes. So you're afraid of change and start thinking of yourself as a soul and stop thinking of yourself as a body. The soul is not born, but because he takes on a material body, the body takes its birth. The soul does not take birth there, and the soul does not die. Anything which has birth must also have death. You know, these people who are doing what's the science of that they have now of living long, the science. What do they call it? There's a name for it. Anyway, in this science, whose name must not be repeated, they believe they're going to conquer death and be able to keep you in the body forever. Why do you want to stay in the body forever? When it got old and wore out. I mean, really, you know. Anyway, that is wishful thinking. That's not going to happen. And because the soul has no birth, he therefore has no past, present, or future. He's eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. That is, there is no trace in history of his coming into being. And here's a quote from the Vedas. As the worm that fabricates a cocoon encloses itself completely on every side by means of the threads it weaves around itself, even so, the soul, though in reality transcending all material conceptions, covers himself on every side with material conditioning and karmic reactions, and thus deprives himself of his freedom lifetime after lifetime. Chains, my friends. Oh, you love this. You like being up, chained up, huh? Chained to birth, chained to death, chained to disease, chained to suffering, chained to old age. Is that your preference? That's not the nature of the soul. It isn't. And if you think that's the truth, birth, death, old age, and disease, then we are in illusion. It's not the truth. So we must unchain. We must free ourselves from this cocoon we have built around ourselves. It's just like that caterpillar crawling along the ground, meets his friend, the other caterpillar, and he says, I can't do it anymore. I just can't do it. What can't you do? This caterpillar thing. There's got to be more. Well, what do you mean? What are you going to be? I don't know. But this isn't good enough. What are you going to do? And it's been a cocoon, chrysalis around myself. And I'm going to go into meditation. And I'm going to dream something else up for myself. And then after ever how many weeks, out comes the butterfly. All right? So that is the metaphor for the soul achieving moksha. Liberation from repeated birth and death. Then in the next purport, Prabhupada says there are two kinds of souls, namely the minute particle soul, Anu Atma. Anu means atomic. And the super soul, the Vibhu Atma. This is also confirmed in the Katha Upanishad. So this is, we've talked about this many, many times, this beautiful metaphor. Within the heart, we have the soul, the Atma, you as the individual, and the super soul, the Parama Atma, Paramatma. The super soul is God, God in the heart. It's described as if they are two birds sitting in the same tree. We, the Atma, the soul, we're busy enjoying the fruits of the tree, flitting around the branches, going here, going there, doing this, doing that, enjoying ourselves or discovering things in the material world. Never saw him, super soul. Don't even know he's there. Well, where is he? Well, he's right there. Never saw him, never noticed him, until we get tired of all this. And we begin to think more philosophically, self-examination, self-reflection. Where'd you come from? I've been here all along. Well, I didn't know that. Yeah, I noticed. You ready now? You ready to get off your hamster wheel? Because now we'll begin. That's the beginning of spiritual life, spiritual path. When you can recognize that you're not alone in the body, that God is also with you. And through the grace of the Supreme, one can understand the glories of the soul and become free from all material desires and suffering, and at the end of the lifetime, go back to the spiritual world, where you belong, where you came from. Another quote from the Vedas. Reincarnation is simply a soul caught in a web of his own making, causing him to forget his true nature. When one recognizes the futility of serving the ego or trying to make oneself the center of the universe, then one gradually turns his glance back to the self and begins his journey back home to the spiritual realm, where the loving will of God and not the perverted will of the paltry ego reigns supreme. So, who knows what's best for you? You? Always? Depends. Depends on your consciousness. You can tell me instantly what your preference is, what you'd rather do, rather have, rather be. If I offer you two different things and ask you to pick one, you pick one. We cannot always make the right choices. Why? Because we don't want to make the right choices? No, because we don't have the perspective. We don't have the perspective. We don't have the vision. So we need help. The ego will try to control everything. And the ego is completely self-centered. And the ego has... You understand the concept of subjective and objective. Subjective means everything from your point of view. Subjectively speaking, what I think is this. From my point of view, based on what I know and my material conditioning and all the experiences that I've had in my life, let me give you my opinion. That's subjective. That doesn't mean the opinion's correct, necessarily. Objectivity means to look from outside in. To have an objective view that isn't centered on you. Anything that comes from the ego is always subjective, not objective. And the more we transcend the ego and not allow the ego to control and manipulate us, the more we become conscious and aware, the more we become spiritually enlightened. And aware. Shall I give you an example? How many of us have prejudices? I think there's hardly one of us in this room that doesn't have a prejudice, or certainly has not acted out of prejudice or thought out of prejudice in life at some point. Then, with time and experience, you no longer have that prejudice. That was an issue for you in the past. It is no longer an issue. And you don't think like that anymore because you met people that whom you were prejudiced against without knowing, and now you find out that, wow, these are really nice people. and there's no reason in the world for me to be prejudiced against them because of race, color, belief, religion, political alignment. Make your list, you know. Which football team they like? It's different from mine. Whatever it may be. Yeah. Well, this is a really good person. I don't enjoy. I don't carry this prejudice any longer. Huh? You all have experienced this, no? So this is gaining objectivity and putting behind. Now, how many things have you were taught when you were a child? You know, like, if I look back and all the stuff I was programmed by my parents in childhood, you know, I'd be as far away from here as possible. I just have to, you have to question everything. Whatever you've been told, whatever you've been taught, however you've been conditioned since you were a child, you have to question all of it. All of it. And you say, well, my mother told me it's a good idea to brush my teeth. Good one. Let's keep it. My mother told me all the people that are Protestants and don't have the same religion as us, stay away from them. Well, my best friend was Protestant. So, dismissed that one fairly early on. For example, so many things. You must question it all and decide what is true and bring it forward and formulate your truth in objectivity and in compassion and in understanding and ultimately in love. If we can only learn to love, my friends. I know you all love. I know that. But your love is sometimes conditional. Can we expand it a little bit more? That will transcend the ego. Sangshi Jirnani Yatavi Hoya, Navani Krenati Naroparani, Tatashiri Rani Vihoya Jirnani, Anyani Sangyati Navani Dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up the old and useless ones, the soul accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. That's it. When you go to bed at night, do you put on your pajamas? When you get up in the morning, you get ready for work, you put on work clothes, whatever is appropriate. When you go out in the cold, you put on warm clothing. So many garments. The clothes that fit you when you were 5, they don't fit anymore. Have you seen the pictures of you when you were younger? And you saw how what your hairstyle was and what clothing you were wearing. You go, oh. What was I thinking? And you're just, you know, going with the latest trends. I mean, you know. You know, it's interesting in the Ramayana, the story of Ram. There's actually verses in there that said that Ram and Lakshman wore the hairstyles of the day. And the hairstyle of the day for men was this curly thing that came down along the sideburn. Loose hair came, and that's what they wore, because that was the style. Do you know that? Did you read that? So we're not going to fault you for following the trends, okay? So we changed bodies. We change clothing, we change this, we change that. How many of you for Halloween were wearing your wonderful Halloween costume and you just didn't want to take it off? Or about your child, I want to wear this all week. You can't wear that all week. Right? The body gets old. wears out. So we've got to get another one. That's all. It's not a big deal. It isn't. Don't blow it out of proportion. I know it's death. Don't blow it out of proportion. Don't give it more energy than it deserves. We must learn this. Here's verse 25. Avyakto yam achintyo yam avikaryo yam uchete tasmad evam viditvayanam na nushochanti arasi. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, immutable, and unchangeable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. Well, of course, when somebody dies, a loved one especially, we grieve. Why do we grieve? Because of loss. Because we're losing our loved one. And we're not going to see them any longer. This is understandable. We're going to miss that person. Especially if they had great impact in your life. Like a family member, or oftentimes more so, like a friend. Yeah. But conversely, death should be a celebration. Not a time of grief. It should be a celebration for a life well lived. Do they not do that many times for great personalities? They honor them because they did this, or this person did this and this and this. They instituted that and they started this and so many people benefited. That's a celebration. Or an honoring of a, for a life well lived. What will it be at your death? Will they honor you for a life well lived? That is also our dharma, isn't it? To make a contribution and to know that we've somehow, in some small way, we've made the world a better place by our being here. Right? It's not hard to do. It doesn't have to be a big production. If you're capable of doing things on a big scale, then you should do them on a big scale. Prabhupada is so funny. Prabhupada. He's sitting under a tree in Tompkins Square Park in New York with his cartels. An old man dressed like in Indian robes. And he's playing cartels and he's chanting Hare Krishna. Why? Because he thought it might be a good idea, because his guru told him, to share this with others. So they can benefit from this deeper knowledge of how to free the soul from repeated birth and death and develop a love for God. He had no idea, he says, of what would happen. And the first year in New York, it was horrendous what he went through. Absolutely horrendous. What he had to overcome. And I think he was, 69, 70, somewhere around that. And then just all this happened. And he went around the world and he's influenced. In the beginning it was a few hundred, then it was a few thousand, and now it's been millions. So who knows what level that the effects of what you do will be felt. Who can say? Probably you can't say yourself at this point. So what must we do? We must strive. We And you must at least try to do something. How many times do you say to yourself, oh, I'm nothing. No one wants to listen to me. There's more important people and people with more gifts and talents and abilities than me. You know, they'll do it. Oh. Well, that lets you off the hook, doesn't it? Therefore, you're free to do nothing. No. It's also your dharma, your duty, to use what God has given you. To utilize the gift, the gifts, the talents, the abilities that you have. You possess them. We all possess them. We're all different. Don't say you don't have any. Oh, I can't do it. Well, you're not looking very carefully, are you? Stop watching the telly. Start looking. Put the phone down for a few minutes. Look inside. What do you have to offer? Yeah. So, what happens? Krishna convinces Arjuna. It takes about this much convincing here in this book. Finally, at the end, he explains the entire yoga process. He says, I've explained it all to you now, so do what you wish to do. Did he browbeat him? Did he beat him down? Did he tell him he had to do it? Did he call him names? Yeah, he referred to Arjuna all kinds of names. And every name he referred to him was a name to empower him further, isn't it? Dhananjaya, whoa, winner of wealth. So many names he used, adjectives for Arjuna, all to empower him, not to bring him, not put him down. So he says at the end, now do what you wish to do. I've explained it to you. What does he do, my friends? He picks up the bow and the arrows. And he goes and he fights the battle on the basis of dharma. Right action, duty, responsibility. And since God is driving his chariot, what happens? He wins. So, that's why we're here. Let us align ourselves with our higher purpose. Let us realize we are souls, not bodies. Stop limiting yourself. The more you can expand your vision, your view of yourself, and what you can do in the world, the more you will do. And what you can do to get out of this world, ultimately. And what you can do to serve others, to serve Krishna, to develop your love for everyone, ultimately for God. Thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Okay. Questions? Comments? Wonderful. You got it all. And not a note was taken. I love it. Just retained it. Just like the sages of old.
Could you repeat that, just that line you said at the end, the more that we can expand our vision, the more we can do in the world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what can you dream? When you were a child, didn't you have dreams? We all have dreams. Do you still have dreams?
Yeah.
Are you still dreaming?
Yeah.
I hope so. Otherwise, what happened? So dream not only for yourself. Dream for all of us. Can't we all be in your dream? can't we all be included? If your dream is a dream that makes you happy and makes a contribution, can't we all be part of that?
Yes.
Return to the innocence of your childhood in dream with the abilities you possess as an adult and all of your education and your life experience and all the difficult things you have undergone, overcome. How many difficult things has each of us overcome in life to even be sitting here today? Or some of you had to change countries for various reasons, sometimes very difficult circumstances. And with great hope, hopes are dashed. And then we try again. We look for another path, another road. Right? It's the triumph of the human spirit. What's more glorious than that? If you do it by yourself, good luck. It's much harder. Hook up with this guy, Krishna, and let him help you. He wants to help you. He's waiting. The super soul. No, he didn't see me. Still didn't see me. Oh, he's not seeing me. That's Krishna speaking. Super soul in the heart. I keep waving at him. He doesn't see me. Oh, there you are. Okay. Now it gets exciting.
In the heart transplants. And the heart is removed. And the vision has a new heart.
You're the doctor. Heart transplant, heart's removed, new heart. Correct. The soul is in the heart area. I spent some time with Aboriginal elders in Australia many years ago. I've been to Australia many times. And the bond man is the mystic. And the bond man could move his soul anywhere in the body. You can do that. The soul can be moved around. If you're a yogi. I remember one story this Mowal Jarli, this Aboriginal elder, told me. He said the police were after this guy. You know, this is post-contact, they call it. Pre-contact, post-contact. Before the white man came, okay? You know, when the white man gets there, there's always trouble. Believe you me. If you don't believe me, read history. So the white man had come, and so they were after this Aboriginal guy. I don't know for what. I don't remember. And they shot him. They shot him through the heart. And the guy got up and ran away. And they asked their guide, what just happened? We got him clean through the heart. He got up and ran away. Oh, yeah, bond man, yeah, he's a mystic. He's moved the heart through the finger. You have to shoot his finger if you want to kill him. So that was the story. Now, I didn't witness it, so I don't really know, but it's a great story. So, heart transplant, yeah, you're still in the body. You didn't seem to go anywhere. But I often wonder with organ transplants if some of the qualities of the person who possessed the organ before you are not then felt in your body. Anybody have experience of that? Any transplant recipients here? No? Anyway. Okay.